gang. This is the first, and hopefully not the last time you will be hearing this. Let's do an audio check, make sure that everybody can hear me. This is going to be a new evening. And first want to say, Jen has been through a lot the past couple of days. So it's a good opportunity to take a night off. Our normal guests that were supposed to come on, unfortunately, were not able to make it and had been contemplating potentially doing a solo show for a while just to see how this would play out. I think this was something that we had in mind potentially for both of us because Jen does do solo shows, you know, every once in a while, like she did one with Vosh recently. And so the way that I would see this format, if I'm going to do it, let's say, you know, once a week, for example, is to basically come on, talk about certain topics, and then interact with the audience. You know, if you guys have certain topics that you want to talk about, that's more or less how I see the format. And, you know, potentially having conversations as well as we've normally done. I think Jen and I have a great dynamic together. I think that there are also times where it's sometimes more beneficial where we have the freedom to discuss certain topics without worrying if we're going to be bumping into each other and that type of thing. You know, I think that in itself is also very important, you know, just in terms of, you know, personal growth, you know, but also being able to, you know, really hammer into topics, hence pontificating with Pete. Yes, I know I have a tendency to go off sometimes and elaborate maybe a little extensively on one thing or another. But I think that this is going to be an opportunity to really, you know, dive deep into some issues that I think are very important. And what better time, you know, to come live than to talk about what I think is an opportunity for the progressive movement to really figure out exactly what it wants to be in terms of its activism, in terms of where they think their, you know, best laid plans are going to be, you know, relating to, all right, that's a little too bright. Hey, Bronx, good to see you, brother. I'm going to make this a little bit lighter. I think that's about right. Perfect. So today, unfortunately, was a terrible day politically for the progressive movement because we thought we were garnering a lot of momentum in California for the universal health care bill, CalCare AB 1400. We have had Representative Ash Kalra on the podcast on multiple occasions to discuss the importance of universal health care at the state level. Now, I know there are a lot of people in the MMT community who really don't like this idea and think that because it's a state budget and there are restrictions on how much you can fund an actual program, that there would be a lot of shortcomings regarding a statewide universal health care system versus a federal universal health care system. And there is a lot of validity to that. But as Ash Kalra had mentioned when he came on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, this is very recent. You know, he talked about the MMT principles that would be applied to the CalCare bill. So I thought he cleared that up pretty well, if we're being honest. But then today, even though it had already passed two major committee hurdles, it was supposed to get a floor vote in the State House in Sacramento today in California. That vote did not happen. And the person who ultimately decided not to have the floor vote was Representative Ash Kalra. And he's going to have a lot to answer for because there are a lot of people out there who are not going to take this lightly. If you're looking on social media right now, people are up in arms, really unhappy. And so what's that going to mean? What is that ultimately going to do in terms of the movement? Well, as you know, we had put out on social media not too long ago, maybe it's time to have a march on Sacramento. You know, we can't seem to get people to march for universal health care on Capitol Hill. Well, maybe we could get them to march on Sacramento. If you get, I don't know, 100,000 people in the street, a couple hundred thousand people in the street, and literally build an encampment around, you know, the state capitol, I think that that could potentially be what really needs to happen. You need to have serious activity in the streets because right now the elected officials don't seem to think that anything's really going to happen if they don't even bring this to a vote. Remember a few years ago, you know, the scapegoat was Anthony Rendon. He was the person in the state house was seen as the enemy of the people and the reason why. Well, it's just Anthony Rendon. He's the reason why we don't have universal health care. We're not even going to have a vote on it. No, now you can't even have a vote. Because they don't want you to know who the representatives are that are, let's be honest, on the take from private insurance and big pharma, because that's what this really comes down to. What else could it possibly be? There isn't anything else. It's either we are going to fight against the real problem here, which is corporate special interests owning our government at the federal, state, and yes, even the local level, as a reason why we can't have the things that it seems that universally people really want to have. Why would you not want to have universal health care in California? It makes all the sense in the world. It's the most expensive state to live in. You know, if you had universal health care, the cost of living would go down because the cost of health care wouldn't be anywhere near as much. You'd be eliminating a huge part of your, you know, monthly expenses. You'd be helping out countless amounts of people. Everybody would be covered. And over time, the healthcare costs lower and lower and lower. So that's another thing people don't seem to understand. You know, oh, hang on, having a technical problem here. Let's get this baby fixed. I think we twist it this way, or is it this way? Give me one second, team. All right, well, that one's down. That one's not hanging on, but I think we're going to have to go with my mic, the mic that I normally use. So let's continue. Again, it's the first show. There's going to be technical problems. We all know that. Oh, that's much better. That is much better for me. All right. So, you know, when you have a representative on your show who says that we're going to bring this to a vote, you know, we are going to allow the people to know who is on the side of universal health care and who is on the side of private insurance and big pharma, and we can't even get that. Mr. Calra better have a good reason for why he didn't bring it to a vote today, because it looks like the bill is now dead in this session. And that's bad, really bad. He's a nice guy. We've had him on our show. I like Ash. He's not my friend. If he had an opportunity today to at least show that, okay, there's about 20, 25 representatives who are never going to vote for it because they're taking enough campaign contributions that allow them to get reelected without having to face any opposition regarding a primary challenge, whatever it is. You can't win with just electoral politics. It's not possible. Electoral politics is very important, and we must elect non-corporate representatives at all levels of government. That is a given. But it can't just be that. You have to have movement in the streets. It's the only way this is going to happen. If you see what's happening right now in California, yeah, people are pissed off, but you know what? It doesn't matter if you're pissed off on Twitter. Get pissed off and get the hell to the state capitol. Set up a fundraiser to make sure that people can not only get there, but that they can stay there, that they can have food and water and shelter. It's a little cold this time of year, but it's definitely something that you can sustain if necessary. I'd love to help in any way that I can. I may be on the other side of the country, but, you know, we recognize how important this is. You want them to have a vote? Make them scared to go to work. That's one way to do it. You got people everywhere. You got people in Sacramento who want universal health care. You got people in the Bay Area. You got people in Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, San Diego. You got people in Fresno. You got people in Palm Springs. You got people everywhere. They want universal health care. Now you just have to figure out how to mobilize them. Can't just vote it in. It's not going to work. And if there is any indication as to what's happened here today, there's no question that you can't vote your way into progressivism. It's not going to happen. So you have to be willing to get off your butts. Yes, literally get off your butts and get up there. Get to Sacramento. I'm looking at you, Cal nurses. I'm looking at you, Our Revolution California. All of you guys. You need to be organizing this right now. And you don't wait. You strike while the iron's hot. People are pissed off. And when people are pissed off, that's when you get them to do stuff. And I'm looking at everybody who's out there in California right now, especially people who are supposedly in the progressive independent media circuit. Every one of you, you know who you are. I'm not naming names, but you know who you are. Encourage people and do everything you can to get them to Sacramento and get them there this week. Don't wait. Get them up there. Get into good trouble. Be annoying. And get stuff done. They're counting on you not doing anything. They're counting on you to sit on your ass and take it. Don't take it. I know I wouldn't. I'd be fighting my ass off. And Bronx is right. The Tea Party was a very small band, but an effective band of politicos that got what they wanted. And they stopped at nothing to get it. And that's how the progressive movement has to be. You have to stop at nothing to get what you want. And it's what the people want. It's not like you're fighting for something that isn't in the interests of where the people want it to go. They want universal health care. We all know that it's a racket. And more than anything else in our country right now, overwhelmingly, people want universal health care. And of course, as I always like to point out, universal health care is a system where we remove the for-profit middlemen in between us and our doctors. It is a government-funded, not government-run, healthcare system. We are not looking to have a healthcare system, even though it is acceptable and comparable in other parts of the world. But this is the United States of America. This is the capitalist dream, if you will. We're not telling doctors that they can't make money. That's not what CalCare is. That's not what Whole Washington is. That is not what the New York Health Act is. That is not what Medicare for All is. It is the removal of the for-profit middlemen in between us and our doctors who do not do anything to improve healthcare outcomes. Nothing. They make it worse. They figured out a way to rip you off. And they've been ripping you off for generations. And I think most people know that now. I don't think most people are as naive about it as they once were. I think they always suspected, well, it's one foot in, one foot out. Maybe if we did this, it would get better. That's why a lot of people are always moderate, if not outright pragmatic about what they think the solutions need to be. Well, if we just go a little bit further in this direction, we might be okay. If a little bit further in that direction, we might be okay. No. Aetna doesn't have any reason to exist. Cigna has no reason to exist. United Healthcare has no reason to exist. Blue Cross Blue Shield has no reason to exist. And as far as Pfizer, as far as Merck, as far as any of those big pharmaceutical companies are concerned, they have every right to make medicine. They do. And they have every right to make money. But they do not have a right to price gouge the American people. Our current system allows it. And that's why I do want to transition into an issue that I saw some very disturbing responses this week. You know, there's a lot of people who are really fed up with capitalism, and rightfully so. The system sucks. And this is not the form of capitalism that I think anybody would normally agree with, because it's not a good system. But right now, the system is falling apart. And it's a question of how it's going to completely collapse, because that's where it looks like we're heading right now. When you think about the system failing the way that it does, and this assumption that anybody who's rich, especially anybody who's a billionaire especially, doesn't have a conscience and doesn't really care, I don't agree that it's not possible for somebody to actually do the right thing. What I do believe is that they are going to always use the capitalist system to their advantage if they can figure out a way that actually does benefit the masses. And that person, of course, is Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban, who I happen to like, not just because I'm a huge basketball fan, was very happy for him when the Dallas Mavericks beat the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals in 2011. Got to put that out there. But, you know, Mark decided that he wasn't going to rest on his laurels anymore. And you know why Mark is doing what he's doing, starting a company called Cost Plus Drugs? The reason he's doing it is because he knows the system's failing. And he knows something has to be done, otherwise the party's over for even people in his class. Because they're usually the first ones who get targeted when the whole system falls apart. So what does he do? He's starting his own pharmaceutical distribution company at very low prices. He's going to disrupt the market. And he's going to drive other prices down in other industries. It's going to happen. Now, is it going to be the end all be all? I don't know. But I'm excited about what he's doing. I don't remember the exact name of it, but there is a pharmaceutical drug that deals with leukemia that right now on the market is price gouged at approximately $10,000 a month. Yeah, that's right. I'd like to know who can afford $10,000 a month for life-saving medicine. Less than 1%. Mark Cuban is selling that leukemia life-saving drug on his website, costplusdrugs.com, for $50 a month. You think that's not going to disrupt the industry? You bet your ass it will. And that's why no one's really talking about it. Because, let's be honest, it's kind of going to take somebody at Mark's level to basically sound the alarm. That's really what it's going to take. It's going to take somebody at his level to basically say, wake the F up, because we're in big freaking trouble right now. You guys may not see it, but you know, it reminds me of what happened with Bernie Madoff. Oh, about, I guess at this point, it's about 13 years ago now. There was one gentleman, his name's slipping me, but he's from Massachusetts. His name was Mark something. And he was the one person who was looking at the financials regarding the way that Madoff's hedge fund was being operated. And he said, this doesn't make sense. This is a Ponzi scheme. He's not investing in anything that's having a real return on investment. He's just putting money out and money's coming back in. And so what the hell's going on here? And of course, in that class, no one wants to talk about it because they pretend like it doesn't matter because they know that it's socialism for the rich and rugged individualism for everybody else. But of course, Madoff ended up losing a lot of money for very rich people and he bit the bullet as a result. But people knew what was going on. They knew. They didn't do anything about it. Mark Cuban is in a unique situation right now where he knows that what is going on is serious business. If he didn't think that we were not in a desperate situation, there is no way that he would do this. He follows trends. That's what he does. Mark Cuban is one of the most savvy innovators I've ever seen. Does he hit it all correct? No. But you know what he has? He has a conscience, and that matters a lot. He's in a position in society where he doesn't have to care about anything. I mean, the guy was already worth a couple of billion dollars prior to his ownership of the Dallas Mavericks. He's probably worth at least $4 or $5 billion now, thanks to that. Like I said, he's somebody who really doesn't have to care one iota about anything. He can live high up on the hill and no one can touch him. But much like FDR was a class traitor in his day, that is exactly what Mark Cuban may potentially become. And the one person who I have to call out in this instance, and I don't like calling people out because I hate the drama. I can't stand it. It's one of the things that we have no time for. We really don't. But the one person who I have to say really irked the hell out of me was Anna Kasparian of TYT. The way that she went after Mark, suggesting that what he was doing wasn't even good at all, was actually a bad thing. I don't know who you're trying to cater to or who you think you're appealing to, but that is a horrific job. At least Mark is trying something. Because if you look at what happened today in California, where you live, if we're going to wait on elected officials to get ish done, we're going to get nothing done. And this planet's going to burn. This is one of the reasons why the presidency, the executive office, is so important right now. We have a broken legislative branch of government. We do. The goal is not to get anything done. And the only time you get policy done is if it's a complete corporate giveaway, like the infrastructure bill actually is. And so when people are out there touting the infrastructure bill, again, I'm just glad I'm not an elected official because I would never be able to sell such a hill of bullshit. But I guess that's part of the job. You got to defend your side, make them look good. But again, what Mark is doing with cost plus drugs, it's an absolute good. I cannot thank him enough for what he's doing. At least somebody's trying something. And you know what Mark's going to end up doing? He's going to end up saving the lives of thousands and thousands of people. He is. And he knows it. Is he really going to make much economically as a result of this? No, probably not. But I don't think that's really his goal. I think his goal is obviously not to lose any money. I don't think that's out of line. You know, I don't think is he just doing it out of the benevolent kindness of his heart? Probably not. But at the same time, I think what he's doing is going to help a lot of people. A lot of people. You can't tell me that when you have a pharmaceutical drug that people charge $10,000 a month for, that they can now get for $50 a month, that's not going to literally not only save lives, but disrupt the market. It is. And it's just getting started. Who knows how many drugs are going to be on his exchange? There's going to be people lobbying for all kinds of stuff now. And what's going to end up happening with these private insurance and big pharmaceutical companies when everybody is going to Mark? They're going to cost plus drugs. That website's going to get shut down or it's going to, you know, go offline because it's going to have so much traffic. I hope he's got a ridiculous amount of bandwidth to deal with it because that's what's going to happen. And rightfully so. You know, we think about all the information that gets put out there. What's real? What isn't real? You know, there's a lot of this talk about misinformation. The truth is, the corporate aristocracy wants control over everything. They don't want anything to slip through. If something like this slips through, a generic drugs market where anybody can afford the necessary drugs that they need, oh, forget it. It's not just one industry that it's a ripple effect. Our whole economic system is cratering right now. And the last thing it can afford is to have a cowboy, if you will, come in and really disrupt it, because that's going to translate into other industries following the same suit. And people know that. It's not just about having a universal healthcare system, which, in my opinion, this brings us that much closer to. Because universal healthcare, Medicare for all, as we said, eliminates the for-profit middlemen. There will be no more price gouging of life-saving drugs. This is people, just a little taste. We'll get a little taste of universal healthcare. This is what they're going to get. You know, this is going to be really good. They're going to get the drugs, going to be happy. Everybody's going to be fine. That's the way it's going to be. So when I say that this is a huge thing, and again, no one's talking about it, it sucks, but we're talking about it. And we're going to keep talking about it. And we thank you, Mark. And you know who else we thank? I'm going to say. We're going to thank Marianne Williamson. And why are we thanking Marianne Williamson? The reason we're thanking her is because somebody of prominence on the political left finally decided to speak up against this tyrannical approach by the corporate media establishment to 86 Joe Rogan from social media and from his Spotify podcast. This idea that it's about some misinformation campaign, that Joe is a danger to society, that you have to stop him. They want to stop him because they can't control him. That's what it is. That doesn't mean that I agree with what Joe says or what some guest who comes on his podcast has to say. But as Marianne said today very eloquently, unless somebody is calling for violence or for hatred to spark violence, you know, like the lunatics up in Orlando, the Nazis. Yeah, that's a big deal. But I'll tell you what's an even bigger deal is Marianne speaking up and saying, you trying to ban Joe Rogan is akin to banning books like the conservative nut jobs here in this state are trying to ban with the book Mouse. Oh, you don't want to teach history? You better. Otherwise, you're doomed to repeat it. Or maybe that's your goal. I don't know. I am a constitutional absolutist in many ways. I admit that. I think everybody's opinion should be heard. Doesn't mean it's right. But because Rogan's podcast and his platform is so big and so much bigger than the individuals, they're afraid of him. They're afraid of people questioning the corporate established narrative. It's how you keep people under control. It's been that way forever. That's not new. But he grew so big that they couldn't stop him. And now they're desperately trying to stop him. They're trying to get everybody behind it. But you know what they're not talking about? They're not talking about the hedge funds that have taken over ownership of so much of these musical artist catalogs. That you know about that. That you didn't know about Neil Young getting $50 million so that BlackRock, yeah, BlackRock, now owns his catalog. Ain't that wonderful? We have to recognize who our enemies are. And it's not our neighbors. And it's not our friends. It's not people who one side voted for Bernie, the other side voted for Hillary, or one side voted for Bernie and the other side voted for Trump. They don't run society. Some of the Hillary supporters think they do, but that's another story for another day. No, the real enemies are the people who run society, and you know who they are. And then you have the people who are the stenographers for them, the ones who are in the way of us actually having an informed narrative. Because for them, it's a career, and it's a very well-paying career. The most egregious offender that I have seen out of anybody on corporate media is Jim Acosta. He's the worst I've seen. Biggest self-promoter I've ever seen. And it wasn't just that he did a segment talking about how he thought Joe Rogan should be kicked off of Spotify. He, as a supposed newsman, is trying to encourage other musical artists to follow suit, as Neil Young and Joni Mitchell did, to threaten Spotify with removal of their music in order to get Rogan off the air. Who the hell does Jim Acosta think he is? And who the hell considers him a newsman? That's what I want to know. because he's just a paid propagandist. And at this point, he doesn't even hide it anymore. He is so bad. And I got to tell you, for anybody who didn't see when Jim Acosta was peddling his stupid book about journalistic integrity and got questioned by someone who was asking, so what's your position on Julian Assange? And he didn't have anything to say. Just mealy-mouthed his way through it. Didn't want to talk about it because that breaks the facade. And that's what Joe Rogan does. He breaks the facade. You don't have to agree with him, but if there's one thing I think we all know about Joe Rogan, he walks to his own beat. He doesn't answer to anybody. And that drives people in power insane. Why do you think they reacted the way they did when he said, I support Bernie Sanders for president? They don't want independents and potentially libertarian conservatives now supporting Bernie Sanders and what Bernie's fighting for. Then the party's really over for them because it's a unifier. Bernie had that unifying message that worked for everybody. Well, if we're going to talk about what the real problems are in society, corporate special interest is controlling our government, and we have to do something to stop it. When we stand together, there is nothing we can accomplish. And Bernie was right. There is nothing we can accomplish if we stand together. But right now, we're broken off into a whole bunch of other factions. And we're seeing that on social media all the time. Everybody's cloud chasing. Everybody's got something else that they want to muse about or some other content creator that they want to complain about. People complain about us. Where's that going to get us? Nowhere. Who the hell are we? We have a platform, but I've got maybe a dozen people watching right now. Hopefully more will see it. Let me know what you think of this format. I'm happy to keep doing it as long as you enjoy it. I'm not just going to do it if no one gives a damn. But while we're on the subject, please hit the like button. Please make sure you're subscribed because I unsubscribe people all the time. Share this wherever you can. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube, of course, most important network of all. If you could do that, that would be wonderful. As you guys know, I ain't cheap. So I'm going to ask you again. Please hit the like button and share. So I'm going to put that out there right now. I thank Marianne Williamson because she had the courage to say that enough is enough. I am vaccinated and boosted, and Joe Rogan can say whatever he damn well pleases on his platform. And the tweet went viral. And I looked at all the responses. Overwhelmingly, they support her. Are there outliers who think that she's bad? Yeah, of course. There's always going to be some people. You're not going to win everybody, but if the overwhelming majority says, yes, thank you, somebody, please stand up to this tyranny of big tech censorship, it has to come from the left. It can't come from the right. Because the secret, ladies and gentlemen, big tech funds the Democrats. They don't fund the Republicans. And if they do, they fund it very little. These are all Silicon Valley-based people. Who do you think Bill Gates donates to? Who do you think Mark Zuckerberg donates to? Who do you think, I don't even know if Elon Musk does donate. I have to look into that. I know that he supported Kanye West, which again is just a joke. We know that. And of course, Jeff Bezos. Bezos is a little bit more shrewd about where his money goes. So we have to keep we also, there's a lot of people like to say, follow the money. Following the money is very, very important because that will tell you who's basically putting money in the back of people's, you know, in their back pockets. We know that that's bad. But Marianne, she's been on fire. And I know that about, I want to say, 2 months ago, maybe a little less, but there was an article by a good journalist, Holly Arbein, in Politico, that talked about the possibility of President Biden having a primary challenger in 2024. I personally don't think Joe is going to run again, and they're trying to figure out the most sensible way to try to transition, if you will, whatever that's going to look like. But the three individuals who were mentioned in that article as the possible primary challengers to Joe Biden, it was only three. One of them was Joe Sandberg, the entrepreneur from California. He is going to be our main guest on the podcast on Wednesday night. We had planned to have him on this previous week. It didn't work out. It happens. But he's going to be here on Wednesday night. And we're going to have a great conversation. And yes, I will ask him whether, we will ask him, whether or not he is going to be running for president. I don't think he's going to do that. The next person was Nina Turner. We all know what I think and Jen thinks of Nina Turner. She is the best of us. And I think that she would be this potentially the strongest heir apparent to Bernie's movement, but she has chosen another path. She is running for re-election in Congress in Ohio's 11th district. And shots already fired in that race. Her opponent and incumbent, Chantel Brown, she went on MSNBC today and said that it was Nina who was taking all the dark money. Nina did have a super PAC supporting her, but there is no dark money that was getting behind her. You can find the money that was donated. Dark money is when you can't trace that money. And all that money went to Chantel Brown. I guess the idea is to basically lie your way into success if you can. Kayla, thank you for checking in. It was actually the first topic I covered this evening. Hope you'll check it out. We are extremely disappointed in Representative Ash Kalra, who could have brought this vote to the floor. It goes without saying that we really need to strike while the iron's hot and try to get as many people up to Sacramento as possible right now to march on the state capitol for CalCare. Electoral politics alone is not going to solve our problems. We need non-corporate representation, but we need an inside-outside movement, as we've always said. The outside movement is people in the streets, and we need them now. So that's where we stand on that topic. And then getting back to what I just said. Marianne Williamson right now, at this very moment, looks to be the heir apparent to Bernie's movement. And who would have thunk it? Apparently a lot of people. I like to observe what people say on social media. And so much of the responses regarding Marianne, I should have given her a closer look. I should have been more considerate of her message. When you are running into the progressive lane in 2020, there really was only room for one candidate. A lot of others were jockeying for position, and a lot of others have co-opted the word progressive. We all know that. To me, the word is non-corporate. That's the word. It is a word. It's a hyphenated word, but it counts. She's been doing a fantastic job. If you haven't seen some of her recent interviews, I highly recommend you check them out. And I think there's going to be quite a few more coming up. I think she's got the cojones to do this. I do. I also think, and this is one of the big differences between Marianne and Bernie that I think could tilt the scales in her favor. I think Marianne has the ability to go into the rooms with the very affluent and powerful and communicate with them in a way that Bernie never could. I think she would have the ability to sound the alarm in a way that Bernie simply wasn't able to do. Marianne's been in that world for a very long time. You know, she was Oprah's spiritual advisor. I mean, how much more in the club, if you will, can you get in terms of connections and influence and meeting all different types of people all over the world? And being able to tell them, this country's going in one of two directions. It's either going in the direction of FDR or it's going in the direction of Hitler. Make your choice. And I think she can make that case. So we'll see what happens. This is assuming, of course, that Bernie doesn't run for a third time, but I simply don't see it. I think Bernie knows that he could actually be a lot more effective from the outside as the Senate. What is his role again? All these roles that they take on. Chair of the Budget Committee. But in terms of his influence, there is no question that I think that that's where Bernie's final place in politics is going to be. I think that he knows that the best thing he could do now is try to lift up his heir apparents, if you will. And we'll see how that comes about. But obviously, nothing's going to happen until the midterms. We know that. And it'll be very interesting to see how that ultimately unfolds. I think we're in for quite a bumpy ride. But like I said, I agree, Blue. I think that's true. I think Bernie's done what he was capable of doing, and more or less he's taken it as far as he could take it. Now it's a question of where it goes from here. Let me know what you think in the comments. If you think that Marianne Williamson is capable, potentially, of carrying Bernie's torch. Good friend of the show, Osiris, stuck in the middle. People don't want better Medicare for all. I don't care what polling says. People would rather boycott Rogan in support of Big Pharma instead of fighting for Medicare for all. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have their priorities straight. They don't know exactly what they should be doing. That's a big problem. Our priorities really need to come into focus. You know, I was having this conversation with a friend earlier. You know, we're in a situation right now where the next evolution of the progressive movement has to be this. We have to prioritize where we are most effective. There are a lot of people who want to run for certain positions, but they don't have a snowball's chance in hell of winning or even making a dent. That's not being effective. There are other ways to be effective. And it isn't necessarily chasing the highest seat. It could be a local seat. Just getting on a board, getting on a city commission can make all the difference in the world. There are city commissions out there that have UBI pilot programs now. And that's because people realize, you know what? Everything starts at the local level. That, to me, I think, is a big, big part of the equation. Figuring that part out. We all want to play a role, but the left is so discombobulated when it comes to cohesion. It's a lot of chefs in the kitchen. It's a lot of, I guess what you would call, you know, that there's a lot of egos. That's a big part of it. And let's face it, drama sells. Drama absolutely sells. We've seen channels literally build themselves up. We saw it over the last year following Force the Vote. People who were taking sides between Jimmy and Cenk. And, you know, it's one thing to cover a topic and talk about it. It's another thing to cover it every day for weeks and even months on end, if you can believe that that's possible. And this whole idea about I'm going to debate somebody, what are you debating exactly? I mean, I see some of these debates and I am just perplexed as to how this is productive. If it was productive, fine, that makes sense. But I don't see anything that's productive about it. The only way that you have informed conversations. Matt, you're absolutely right. You know who's actually done a great job with this is Vosh. Now, of course, not everybody agrees with Vosh. I don't. There are a number of takes of his that I don't agree with. But one thing that Vosh does do very well is he reaches people, hundreds of thousands of people in the gaming community. That's power. And for the most part, he's pretty spot on with a lot of stuff. That's a big deal. Think about what an outlet Vosh has been for so many, you know, gamers, guys that, and even girls, won't say that they're not out there, but obviously it's a male-dominated industry, who are exceptionally introverted and don't really have much of a social life. But Vosh provides them with that. Makes them feel included and makes them feel relevant. And that's important. In some ways, I'm surprised society hasn't completely broken down at this point. You know, you're almost like waiting for the moment to happen. Like, what's it going to be? We don't know. But we know something's going to happen. It's just inevitable. What happened in California today is just a prime example of that. People are so desperate for anything right now that they can hang their hat on. CalCare could have been a really amazing spark. And you know what they said? Not only are we not giving it to you, we're not even giving you a freaking vote. You're not even worthy of that. Because we got to protect our people. It's sick. And we are at the point now where when something ultimately happens, we're not even going to be shocked. We're just going to say, we told you so. Just kind of knew it was coming. It's really just a matter of when. That's kind of how this is going to be. Joe, I am not a fan of Hassan Piker, but I would agree with you. I think Hassan has absolutely done that too. And for that, I would say that that is important, what he's done, for sure. I would give him that. It is a very important outlet for a lot of people. Don't underestimate how sad and desperate so many people are. And all they want is for somebody to say that they care about them. It could be the difference between them trying to better themselves and be a more functional person in society, or somebody who ultimately decides to pick up a gun. That's really what it is. That's where we are. We have nothing in this country. Nothing. Can't even rent anymore. Now everybody's got to rent in pairs or triads or God knows what else. Who the hell can be a homeowner now? You have no living wage. The infrastructure bill is a joke. And anybody who tells you otherwise is lying through their ass. We do not have an energy policy that mirrors anything like what it should be. President Biden is even worse many times over, yes, than Donald Trump when it came to issuing drilling permits in the United States. We have no health care. We have no hope, is how a lot of people feel. And when people start to lose hope, you start seeing militia groups dressed in Nazi regalia in Orlando like you did today. You know, everybody wants to think that this kind of thing comes from nowhere, that people just all of a sudden decide, I hate people. I can't stand this. I can't stand that. I just hate people. No. Hate comes from desperation. It always has, and it always will. And the false prophet leaders, of which there are many, will always tell you that, yeah, there's lots of problems, but those people are the ones that are causing it, not us, not the ones who are way up here, and you can't touch us. Na, 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 na. But you can hit those guys. Punch down. No. Punch up. That's what you got to do. Nobody stops to think, why is somebody waving a Confederate flag? Why is somebody, yes, even waving the Nazi flag? How does it come to that? Our society is effed up. And let's be honest, there wasn't even that many of them. There's over 20 million people here in the state of Florida, and you're going to focus on 20 of them because they're hate-filled morons? Stop getting distracted. That's what they count on. They count on us being distracted instead of focused. Focus on what's happening in California right now. If you are in California or you know anybody who is close, you know, Carson City is not far from Sacramento. That's an easy trip. I-80 takes you right to Sacramento from San Francisco Bay Area. You could be in Oakland. You could be in San Jose. Get on there. Get over there. Asses in the streets is the only way this is going to change. Yes, we need to elect representatives like Nina Turner. And as a matter of fact, Nina is going to be here on Sunday. We are hosting a fundraiser for her. If you would like to contribute to that, we would love to have your support and make it in the name of generational change. Where can you go and donate on behalf of Nina's campaign? Well, it's funny you should ask. NinaTurner.com. So please do. We want to make her feel very welcome here. We see the benefit in having representation that matters. And whether anybody agrees or disagrees, you know, with the squad or other representatives. Listen, I wish every congressional representative was like Katie Porter. Then we'd really be in good shape. But unfortunately, she's one in a million in many ways. And they're coming for her seat. So if there's somebody I would be circling in terms of who I would be supporting, I'd be supporting her all the way, all the way. There you go, Joe. Spread that word. Let everybody know we're tired of those damn bureaucrats. Christian, I am A-OK. It's the first time I'm doing a show like this. I hope you guys like it. I'd be more than happy to continue it going forward if you think it's worth it. That doesn't mean that the whole night has to be devoted to it. We're coming up on an hour. Probably won't go much longer than that. There's no reason to really overdo it. Sometimes we can have these solo conversations and we'll see how it goes. I'm obviously, like I said, from my perspective, I think it's very important to have a dialogue with the audience, you know, so that's one of the reasons why, like I said, it was just kind of like the perfect storm. I had been meaning to do this. We had been talking about it for about a couple of months now, I would say, just waiting for the right time. We record, as you know, on Mondays and Wednesdays. Tonight, it just so happens that both of our scheduled guests couldn't make it, and Jen was dealing with a personal matter over the weekend. So it just seemed like the perfect time for us to do this. And so, what the hell, took a crack at it. And it seems that we're getting a decent amount of watchers. I mean, at least I'm not all by myself talking to myself, although Jen would probably muse that I would do that anyway. But here I am talking with a group of you guys right now. That is a very good idea, Colorado. And we happen to like Tim very much. In fact, one of the points of contention that we found with the online left started when we defended Tim Black's rant against a portion of the independent media circuit that went hard after Nina because they didn't think she was pure enough. She didn't go to their march for Medicare for All in Columbus, even though she ran about $500,000 ad all over the Cleveland market in support of Medicare for All. Guess that's not enough. But we know it's enough because we know that that's the role that she is meant to fill. Everybody has a role to play, and we all have to play that role, whatever that may be. I'm still trying to figure out what my role is. I'm doing a podcast. I am now working on a statewide campaign here in Florida. Ryan Morales, he is running to be our next agriculture commissioner. It's a very important position, the most important position regarding the environment. I'm going to head up with him in how long is it going to be? In 10 days, I'm going to be going up to the state fair in Tampa. That's going to be fun. I have an opportunity to watch him eat one of those big corn cob things or whatever. You know how those fairs are. Kind of like the Iowa State Fair, where every numbnuts politician runs over there and wants to eat a big corn dog or pizza or God knows what else. Turkey on a stick. But I do think that, as I said, we all do have a role to play, a very important role to play. Don't ever sell yourselves short because you all matter in this movement. Every one of you has something to offer and something of benefit to give. Maybe that role is an activist. Maybe that role is a phone or text banker. Maybe that role is a canvasser. Maybe that role is a candidate. Maybe that role is working for a candidate. Maybe that role is connecting with people in your circle. You know, one of our favorite people in the whole world is Bo of the Fifth Column. He is a wonderful podcaster in the panhandle of Florida. And his network, while he is progressive, but also libertarian, he has a massive crossover. And he has a fantastic role to play, especially in this state. My goodness. Thank goodness we've got somebody like him who can at least talk to crowds like that. We are horrifically divided, and we have to not be divided. I know that's easier said than done. I am so sick of hearing about people who do not want to have anything to do with a person who has a difference of opinion regarding their politics. And if I may, stop using the word Nazi. It is sickening how freely people throw that word around. You devalue the word when you use it. Not everybody is a racist. Not everybody is a sexist. Not everybody is a misogynist. And one more thing. Do you really think if you attack somebody as hard as possible that that's going to get them to change their ways? Or do you think they might just dig in a little deeper in their beliefs and keep it that way? If not, maybe vote in spite of you. Because that's what's going to happen in many races. People are going to vote against their own interests because they find your side to be insufferable. I see it all the time. In fact, I think of my closest friend from back home. He's one of the most hardened conservatives that I know. He looks exactly like the type of person you would expect to see in one of those militia groups. He's bald, he's got a long beard, and he's a tough guy. But you know what? I can talk to him about anything. He'll needle me and tell me I'm a crazy commie or whatever. But he always likes to joke that when, you know, the Civil War starts, he'll spare me. We are too divided of a country right now. We have to figure out a way to pull it back. And it's not going to be easy. But if you stick to the issues, if you stick to the policy, and you recognize that it's about more speech, not less speech, that's when the real change is going to happen. That's why I applaud what Marianne Williamson said about Joe Rogan. She's right. You don't have to agree with him. But you're going to ban him? Are you nuts? It is amazing how things have changed. It really is. we have to have the courage to agree to disagree on things and not allow that to be the end all be all. There are people who are never going to change their mind about abortion. There are people who are never going to change their mind about the LGBTQ community. There are people who are never going to change their mind about the Second Amendment. Both ways. Both ways. It's never going to change. But you know what I have discovered? Most of them agree about the corruption in our political system, if not everybody. I had this conversation with a great friend of mine who's in town from Tennessee. Very conservative. Very big supporter of Ron DeSantis. But when the conversation with her came to, do you agree that the GOP needs a movement like the progressive left has, where we elect non-corporate representatives into all levels of power? The answer is overwhelmingly yes. It's not even a question. It's not that, well, you know, I don't think it makes a big difference. I think it's all this, that. No, no. Very, very specific. We do not need corporate bought representatives anywhere in our government. That's not what our government was designed for. Thomas Jefferson. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. And right now, we are knee deep in tyranny, that's for sure. But if you want to move towards a more liberty-centered society, the only way that's going to happen is if we respect each other's differences. Because the commonalities are a lot more than you think. Progressives and libertarians in particular share a lot in common. And if we are allowed to build upon those, there's no telling what we could accomplish. For every progressive and libertarian that I talk to, universally all agree on civil liberties. Not only should cannabis be legalized, but all narcotics should be decriminalized. Expunge all nonviolent drug offenders' records. Eliminate the for-profit prison system. End qualified immunity. So the police will police the police. Yes, I know it's a play on words, but it works. End the mother effing wars. Libertarians agree on ending the wars. Who emits a bigger carbon footprint on this planet than the military-industrial complex? Nobody. It's not even close. Everybody could be driving a tanker-like automobile, and that will never compare to what the MIC does to this world. So we agree there. Most libertarians agree that we waste money on pointless programs. Well, I'll tell you what, there really is no more pointless program than the for-profit healthcare industry. So if we can eliminate the for-profit middlemen, the more they understand that our goal is not to have the government take over our healthcare, it's for the government to fund our healthcare, which means it's our money and we're deciding where the F it goes. That's what it's about. And you know what? Most of them agree. Most libertarians don't have a problem with government as long as they have a say in it. And right now, we don't have a say at all. Most people agree we have to do something about the environment. Now, you know, when it comes to fracking wells, nobody wants a fracking well in their backyard. Why would anybody? Because they know how devastating it is for the environment. So stand up and say, we're not taking this anymore. Colorado is basically a supermajority blue state now, and they're one of the worst offenders of fracking. Hickenlooper, yeah, he's knee-deep in that world. Parties don't matter. One side may be the side to fight on because of where the Overton window is right now. We're not in a first-past-the-post system. So that unfortunately eliminates a very big problem regarding whether you want to fight in a third party. But you know what? In the state of Florida, it looks like we're going to potentially have ranked choice voting on the ballot. And we usually pass our ballot initiatives. So that's a big deal. We have to fight for where we can get those wins. And I really believe that we can get them. But that really is the message here tonight, guys. Where, oh, where do we find the common ground? If my mission is to try to build a network of people that recognize that we're not going to agree on everything, but we'll agree on the meat and potatoes, that's the key. And I think we can do that. In fact, let me rephrase. I know we can do that. We just have to check our egos at the door. If we get another opportunity to, let's say Marianne Williamson runs for president in 24, what I would want to see in regards to what I think that the movement should look like, similar to the way the Bernie movement evolved, what I would want to see is something that Jen and I did when she was running for Congress. We did service to the community. Imagine what would happen if a presidential campaign was doing something like that. Imagine if a presidential campaign was building community gardens all over the country, or at least building them in the states where they could really benefit in the areas that need it the most, whether in, you know, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, California, even Texas, which will probably play a big role. That could be huge. And that's just one example. There's many different ways that we can make an impact. But we're 6 years in now of this Bernie Trump phenomenon, if you will, where tens of millions of people have woken up politically. And it's a new era, the dawning of a new era, where one old era is desperately clinging to power and doesn't want to let it go. And that's why Nancy Pelosi is running for re-election again. Oh, Lord. And for those of you, shout out to good friend and awesome show, Status Coup. Jordan Cheriton, the best investigative journalist we've got. He did a great segment the other day regarding what the Democratic establishment is doing regarding the primary in both Nevada and Michigan. Check it out if you can. They are coming for us because they know that they're running out of places to go. Because we are on the right side of history. And as I always like to say, what we fight for, people will do for nothing. The other side has to be paid to stop it. That's not a winning strategy, and it never will be. I know things seem dire now, but trust me when I tell you, things can get a hell of a lot better very quickly if we figure out how to get together and get it done. Like I said, right now, anybody who can get up to Sacramento, get up there and start forming a real movement outside the state capitol to the point in which they can't get anything done. They are literally going to fear the people. And when that happens, you'll see something move regarding healthcare. You just got to get people to band together. I'll give money. I'm sure a lot of other people will give money to set up whatever encampments need to happen, food, water, whatever has to be done. But let's do it. Let's not do not wait on this. They shelved the vote. They screwed you, screw them 10 times harder. That's what you got to do. They're not afraid because you don't give them a reason to be afraid. Give them a reason. FDR always said, make me do it. And the people did. FDR did what the people wanted him to do. And if Henry Wallace was president, it would have ushered in an even greater progressive era, but it didn't happen. There's always an opportunity to start fresh, and that's what's going to happen. I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Got one last thing that I want to talk about. those of you who don't know a lot about me, sports is a very big part of my life. And I really, for anybody who just appreciates competition, the NFL playoffs this year in particular has been as competitive as any I have ever seen. It has been a joy to watch the competition. And I will say, when a team goes on a magic carpet ride, much like my New York Football Giants did in 2008, when we pulled off the greatest upset in NFL history, when we beat the undefeated New England Patriots, and what I still maintain, I am a little biased, I understand that, you may disagree, but Super Bowl 42 is the greatest football game ever played. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to the Super Bowl for only the third time in history, and my goodness, they really came out of nowhere. Joe Burrow, you know, he obviously is a kid with an amazing story. But man, oh man, for anybody who knows what it's like to root for the underdog, it's beautiful. That feeling you get where, you know, it's you against the world and the way everything seems to be working against you. They were down 21-3 yesterday against the defending AFC champions in Kansas City, one of the most hostile environments that you could ever play in. And even I was shocked. But one play here, one play there, everything changed. And it's just glorious to watch. But that's why we watch sports. You know, one of the things about sports relating to politics is that sports is usually the great equalizer in many ways, especially when it's your hometown team. Nobody asks you what your political affiliation is. They just know that, hey, we're on the same team. We're rooting for whoever. We're rooting for Cincinnati. We're rooting for, you know, the Rams. One of my good friends is a diehard Rams fan. He loves them so much, he actually tattooed the Rams logo on his arm. And that is who I was able to spend the night game with a group of friends. It was fun. I'm very happy for him. And maybe he's going to get the second Super Bowl as a Rams fan. The St. Louis Rams got a championship 20 years ago. 22 years ago. He was a young one then. But now, probably appreciate it that much more. I guess that's how I've always felt about sports. Is that no matter what's going wrong in society, it's usually the one place where we kind of have this one fabric of our culture that, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, hockey, golf, tennis, swimming, whatever it is, we find a way as Americans to come together and just appreciate great competition. I really, and I agree, Ricardo, it's a little interesting this time for Cincinnati because the last two times they did go to the Super Bowl, they faced San Francisco and they lost. Now they play Los Angeles, but Los Angeles is also going to be the home team. So that's going to be interesting. But they're on that magic carpet ride right now. I would not bet against them. I will say, though, the game really just comes down to whether or not the Bengals' really crappy offensive line can block Sam Darnold and Von Miller. That is not going to be an easy task. In fact, I think they're probably going to get slaughtered in many ways. But there's one thing that Joe Burrow has shown us. He's very fleet of foot. Can't catch that guy. He's got a lot of Pat Mahomes in him. Ironically, the guy he beat to get to the Super Bowl. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. Haven't decided yet what I'm going to do for the game, but whatever it is, it'll be fun. I think one day I'll go to a Super Bowl. Don't know when it'll be, don't know where it'll be, but that's a bucket list item I definitely want to knock off. Definitely want to do it once. So we'll see. Jen doesn't want to talk about sports because she's a disgruntled Dolphins fan and they just can't seem to get out of their own way. But that's all about Stephen Ross. You know, the one thing that I will say regarding Mark Cuban one more time is he's also a great owner. He really cares about his team. He cares about his fans and he cares about winning. Not every sports owner cares about this. The owner of the Miami Dolphins doesn't give a damn about the players or the fans or the game. He just cares about money. And unfortunately, that is a significant makeup of a lot of our sports owners, if not overwhelmingly, most of them. Think about Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington football team. Let me tell you something. Him calling them the Redskins had little, if nothing, to do with the fact that he's just a terrible owner. Maybe the worst. And he is never going to change that name as long as he's the owner. They will always be the Washington football team. That is him having his little tantrum because he doesn't want to do anything regarding, you know, evolution. I think the whole thing about sports names is completely overblown, horrifically overblown, but I get the need to change the name Redskins. That I understand, because that is a slur. And so the fact that his attitude is, I am a master of the universe and I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. That's the mindset of most of the people in the elite class, especially the billionaire class. That's why I celebrate Mark Cuban as much as I do. He has no reason to care about anything, but he cares. And that's a big deal. We're hoping to get him on the podcast. We're going to work like hell to do it. When I say he's a busy guy, he's a busy guy. I've communicated with him through email. He's a busy man, but he's a good man. And we need more like him. And we need more people with guts like him who are willing to do what he's doing. We need more people with guts like Marianne Williamson to speak out the way that she did today. Desperately needed. And we need people to get to Sacramento as soon as possible. Do not let this die, guys. We're bringing the conversation full circle as we conclude. Don't let this die. That's what they're counting on. Oh, I guess we can't pass CalCare. Huh, big deal. You know, maybe we'll try. You know, next time we'll get everybody riled up. No, I think people are at the point now where they're not just going to let it be a next time. It's this time. It's now. We're not taking this issue anymore. So let's figure out a way to get as many people to Sacramento as we can. That should be one of our tasks. If you can, please go to ninaturner.com if you see this live stream and contribute on behalf of Generational Change. It will be going towards our fundraiser for Nina on Saturday and Sunday. There's going to be two events. Jen will be at both. I will be at the one on Sunday. Like I said, Nina's the best of us, and we're going to do everything we can to, you know, hopefully, you know, get her over that finish line. You're damn right we did, Ricardo. I can't think of a better way to wind down this conversation. I certainly hope that everybody has enjoyed it. And yes, Matt, Teddy Roosevelt is my favorite president, bar none. And it is a shame that they did that. And unfortunately, this is where the rage mob has way too much influence. Remember, if we do not learn from our history, we are doomed to repeat it. That's what will happen. So with that said, I hope you've enjoyed it. We got two super chats tonight. Thank you, Osiris. Thank you, Kayla. If anybody else contributes, don't contribute here. Contribute to Nina. because that'll be part of our fundraiser for Sunday. And we will be back on Wednesday night. We've got two huge guests coming on. I don't have the name is Mark Judson, candidate for Congress in North Carolina. I believe the 4th district, if I remember correctly. He'll be coming on the podcast on Wednesday as our first guest. And then we're going to have the hour-long segment with none other than Joe Sandberg, Mr. Entrepreneur from California himself, the grand champion for a living wage. So we hope that you guys had a great night. I think I did okay. I hope you guys think so too. I look forward to your comments. Make fun of me if you want. Tell me how terrible I am, or tell me how decent you thought it was, and that maybe it might be worth doing again. If you guys liked it, I'm happy. And if the conversation that we share enhances the movement in any way and, you know, gets people talking about the things that we really should focus on, then I think I'm doing the right thing. So we'll bundle this up, see where it goes, and then who knows, maybe next week we'll do it again. See you Wednesday, guys.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.